It's Song Talk Radio with Michael, Neil, Phil, and the gang.
Welcome to Song Talk Radio. This is the show with songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of songwriting. We share tips, tools, and techniques, and together we all become better at writing songs. I'm your host, Neil Modi, and with me are the sweeter than sweet members of the Song Talk Radio action team. We have Fritter Phil.
That's me. Well, I guess you just can't do something on video and expect it to come through on the podcast, but I'm here.
Unless you've got those extra terrestrial superpowers, you can see stuff through audio, ESP and that sort of thing. And we have Macaroon Mike.
Macaroon, well, I suppose. Hi, fellas, how are y'all doing? All your sweetness.
All our sweetness. And please send your comments and questions to @songtalkradio on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or feedback@songtalk.ca for the old-fashioned email, and we'll share your thoughts on the show. Please visit us at songtalk.ca to find out how you can be a guest. And for the fellow in the other box, actor, playwright, filmmaker, and musician Michael Lewis Johnson has lived in Toronto since 1990. He spent 7 years as the right-hand man to Big Rude Jake. He blew up on the silver screen in the cult hit Bride of Chucky and was himself a principal subject of a 2010 documentary, A Different Path. His punk band, The New Kings, opened for Rancid, The Fleshtones, and New Model Army. While not touring the globe playing trumpet with the Lemon Bucket Orchestra, Michael is a notorious busker and bartender, having won Now Magazine's Best Bartender in 2013. He leads the Art Spin, playing trumpet while riding his bicycle. He is a creator of the popular Democratic vinyl night D-Side on the B-Side, fronts a giant improvised brass band called Rambunctious, and his quintet Red Rhythm holds a weekly jazz residency at the Communist Daughter since 2003. Michael released a solo EP in 2017 called Half Moon, Half Crazy, and he continues to be creative during this pandemic. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Well, thank you for having me.
You got
No wonder it took so long to get him on the show.
He's well booked. Can you just speak briefly about how you are dealing with this pandemic as clearly a performer and performing musician, among other things? How are you dealing with the pandemic?
It's been really hard. It's been really, really hard. It's was hard to find mental space for the first couple of months, and then finally sort of starting to get creative and get projects happening, and, you know, recording at home or going through old tapes and, you know, just trying to stay on the positive side of things. Yeah, I can go visit a friend up at a farm and help out with some menial labor is really good for the soul here and there. So.
You find you do writing now that you have sort of kind of less structured time?
Pardon me?
You find that you do more writing because you have less structured time?
No. I mean, I'm starting to... I just found that the whole thing was so overwhelming that it was hard to find any creativity. And the one song... some days that I wrote and recorded at home, my first sort of home recording, was one where finally just lying in bed in the morning and, you know, inspiration struck. And instead of lying there wallowing, I actually picked up my notebook and a pen and started writing. And, you know,
sorry to interrupt you. Did you find in general it's easier or harder to write songs when you're in a state of wallowing? Like, can you find yourself to get out of that in order to write a song, or do you find you're in a happier mood and songwriting comes easier?
No, most of my songwriting has come from, there has to be a balance of wallowing where you just got wallowing enough to feel something deep and, you know, that you want to write about, but not wallowing so much that you can't even bother writing about it.
Right.
Right. A lot of things come to me while I'm riding my bike, actually. A lot of times I'll find myself singing in my head while I'm riding, and then, you know, by the time I arrive, I'm like, okay, quick, get the phone out and record this little melody or something.
Do you always write in the same way? You know, like melody first, then lyrics, then music? Or since you play with different types of bands too, I wonder how that affects your writing.
Yeah, you know, it's sometimes it comes lyrically first, or like Well, with the one song that I've done during this whole pandemic, the words came first, and I sat with them for a few weeks before sort of coming up with what the music should be like. And then a lot of the music developed through the process of actually home recording, which is the first time I've ever done something like that. Like, I've always hired professional musicians and give them the sort of vibe on the song, and then they bring themselves to it. But here it was like, okay, here's the guitar part, lay it down. Here's the lyrics. Okay, come up with the bass part, lay it down. You know, like, it all kind of came separately like that. But then there's other songs where I'll just be sitting with the guitar and, you know, nice chord changes come to me, and then I get kind of got it. You know, there's another one I'm working on where I had the melody first, and then I sat down with the guitar and tried to figure out, okay, what could be happening under that melody? And then now I just need to come up with words for it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
completely opposite.
Maybe we could get a bottle like we have in the past and you help me write.
Yeah. That's one method that seemed to work.
when you say the lyrics came first, did they come attached with a melody, or was it literally just words?
Sometimes it's literally just words. It's like a poem.
In the case of some days, it was just the words?
Yeah. Yeah. Some days that tune, some days it came out just as the words. And then I was really kind of didn't know what to do with it. And then I heard the new Bob Dylan song.
Which one?
The big long one where he...
Oh, Murder Most Foul.
Yeah, Murder Most Foul. And I really, really was struck by it. And it kind of opened up a world of possibilities. And then I was sitting in my room one night and I just was looking at the words and started singing them out loud. And I just sang them. Like, I didn't even know if I had a guitar in my hands, or maybe I did, and I was just playing these three chords over. And I just sort of improvised it, the melody and where it went over this, like, very simple repetitive progression. And, you know, was inspired by that Bob Dylan track and how to play around different things, almost as if sermonizing. And then for the first time ever, I actually sat down and listened to that recording I had made of my voice and scored it out note for note on a chart. I've never scored anything out before. But there were some really interesting things that I had done, and I really wanted to retain those certain phrases that had a kind of musicality that, if I was going intellectually top down, would never come to me.
So you mean you actually use like musical notation and put it onto a staff, or do you have some other method of notating that?
No, paper and pencil, like Kana. I wrote out some staff, like I created my own staff paper and drew out the dots.
It was literally the dots and flags is what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Notes.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
How about we take a listen to a bit of that, and then we can come back and talk about how the experience was recording yourself for the first time.
Yeah, so that song's called Some Days.
Right.
All right, let's take a listen.
Fundamental conviction, and I submit to this world of ones and zeros as we pave over nature. future with our good intention. In wave after wave of ones and zeros. Ones and zeros. In everyone feeding on the devil's apple. Devil's apple. Oh. Feeding the addiction to access information. Not seeking knowledge or truth, but self-affirmation. Cells degenerate. Cells, they radiate. Prison cells, prison cells. On the world out there, out there, out there, in a world of fresh air, bike rides and playgrounds and basketball courts and bonfires on beaches and a fresh spring breeze. Down on the corner, in a band in a bar down on the corner. But someday, someday, the blankets are heavy. How long can I lay?
Nice mournful trumpet extra.
Some Days by Michael Lewis Johnson. It's a lot to unpack in that song.
So how was the experience of recording yourself? This is the first time you've done a home recording after all the recordings you've done.
Yeah, it definitely there's a learning curve. And the first sort of 2 days that I worked on it, you know, working, like getting into it. And then, you know, I started at 2 p.m. and now it's 7 a.m. I should probably take my eyes off this computer screen. And, you know, and then my ears hurt for another 3 days. I had to like wear earplugs constantly to try to save my, you know, you just get into it and it's so easy to just really damage yourself.
Did you start the recording process before you finished writing the song?
No, the lyrics were done before anything. And then I just came up with those three chords and I wanted it to be this sort of like I played it. I was shooting a video for it today and basing it on a bunch of different performers all sort of in the same space of not being able to get her to bed. And my one friend said, "Oh, hey, I got a bridge for your song, you know?" And I was like, no, it doesn't need a bridge. It doesn't need a chorus. It doesn't need anything like that. It's this repetitive thing of when you're lying in bed and you can't do anything and you're in a depressive spiral, there is no change. There is no bridge. Right? That's the whole problem.
And yet there is this feeling of this kind of stream of consciousness spiraling, just thoughts coming out, right? Like it very much does read more like a poem than like a song in that sense, but the underpinning, the consistency of the underpinning is what sort of holds it, grounds it, and keeps it and keeps it anchored, right? Because otherwise these lyrics and these melodies would just sort of fly off in the ether without any kind of anchor.
Well, I hopefully they are anchored, and
that's what I mean. And I think because you didn't introduce any change in the music except for the breaks, which are really cool, right? Like you just break for a bar and sing a cappella, and then drop the beat back in. Aside from that, it is relentless and recurring, but it's the stuff that's going on top that creates the interest, right?
Yeah. I experimented with laying electric guitar down. That was more of a lead guitar, sort of commenting all the way through, and then trumpet passes where, you know, I was just sort of improvising while listening along, as if I was a player sitting in, you know, commenting around the vocals. But then it lost something, and I thought, you know, it's really better if I just pared everything back and made it simple. So I mean, I didn't sample that trumpet part. That's me actually just playing that same riff.
Oh, wow.
Over again in those choice spots, right? Like it's about creating space sometimes, you know?
And certainly it takes a certain degree of maturity and experience to say, I need less on this. You know?
Well, of course, that's the most dangerous part about home recording, is that there's no one saying, well, I guess your session is done. So you can like tweak and add until the cows come home. And that's possibly the worst thing that could happen to a musician, because you wind up never getting anything finished.
Yeah. It's all these cats on these like home recording forums and things. Well, I did a session with 200 tracks. I'm like, what in the world are you doing with 200 tracks? I got 9 in mind.
Yeah. Well, isn't Sgt. Pepper's done with like a 4-track or...
Yeah, they did a lot of bouncing down.
A lot of bouncing, but still.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, and I was going to talk about the horns, because the horns really, really elevate it. Because, you know, at first I was thinking, wow, was that like a horn sampled from a record? But, of course, that was sampled from you.
It was me in my kitchen.
Good acoustics in your kitchen.
Yeah, it's got that kitchen reverb.
Nice and mournful.
Yes. It does give it so much life, you know, in a way that sort of a sampled thing or a virtual instrument never could, you know, because it's just so there, which is so nice.
What about the drums? Were they MIDI, like virtual drums, or?
The drums were, the drums may be changing, actually. Today I talked to a real drummer, Don Kerr, has agreed to lay some drums on. That's actually, I'm impressed that nobody mentioned it, but so many of my friends, immediately they hear it and go, oh, it's when the levee breaks. It's the Zeppelin.
Yeah, I was thinking that, actually. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So,
why not?
Yeah, I'm probably going to, we'll see how it works. I'm torn because it is like the first sample that anybody ever samples, because there's this huge thing at the beginning of that song.
Yeah.
Right. And when the reason why I even got started to record at all is because I realized through trying to figure things out for my vinyl D-side on the B-side thing, I realized that I can go directly from my record player into my computer. And then I thought, wait, I could just sample drums then.
Yep.
And so I sampled that, and then I recorded to that, like I made a loop, and then I just recorded to that loop. Mm. Where somebody's like, well, were you playing to a click track? What's the tempo? I was like, I don't know. I'm playing to the John Bonham.
Bonham's tempo.
Actually, I slowed it down. I slowed down his track. Like I made a loop and I slowed it down until it felt right. But then I just recorded my guitars to that, recorded the bass to that, you know.
Mm-hmm. How do you find, because you're, you know, we have similar background, you know, playing in punk bands. And one of the great things about punk bands is the collaboration with a very rough idea and other people take it and run with it. How do you find just writing on your own? Do you sort of miss that collaboration?
I greatly miss that collaboration. I've always, and I love every element of the collaboration. I love working with a great engineer and a great producer, co-producer, great musicians, and sort of, okay, here's this thing, you know, breathe your life into it, make it your own, and they always elevate it to some place that I could never take it. Even as well, like Proudfoot with like writing and directing a play, it's the same kind of thing, right? Where you have this vision of what you want, but you're malleable enough in that vision to let people do what they do best and bring themselves to it. It's always funny when I go in to do a session as a horn player and they're like, here, I wrote these horn parts for you. And I look at them and go, yeah, you want me to play that? You want me to play a horn part that no horn player would ever play, would ever come up with, you know, because it's so clearly not a horn way of thinking, you know, and then lay something down that's just way simpler.
Speaking of collaboration, the next song you brought to us, One Toke Man, it's you've credited with yourself and Caleb J.W. Brassick. Can you talk a little bit about how the collaboration there worked?
Caleb is my roommate and a dear friend for many, many years. He's a gifted poet and songwriter in his own respect. And it's a song about getting too high. Mm-hmm. And so you could maybe guess about how we wrote it, what our process might have been like. it's you know, trying to make each other laugh as much as possible. And I'm notorious in Lemon Bucket Orchestra for being a one toke man. And when Little Rambunctious plays shows, I am allowed only one toke, because if I have more than one, the show will go in a much different direction.
I have a question about your songwriting in general, because I've seen you play a couple of times with different bands, and the songs that you've written, I always find have a really good connection with the audience. You're very good at writing crowd pleasers, memorable hooks and things that people like to sing along with. How do you do that? Is that just from being an entertainer for all this time, or is there certain things that you think about? Because One Toke Man is a pretty hooky title, and then when we hear it, I've heard this before, you get it right away, and it's very memorable. What is that, just a gift, or do you have sort of a checklist to do songs like that?
I don't consciously go after those things when I'm writing. I think over the course of developing with Rambunctious and Little Rambunctious, hearing a phrase and really getting into the inherent musicality or rhythm in any phrase, right? Mm-hmm. One toke man. Well, that's got a thing of its own right there, right? And it's like, oh, but he's a one toke man, two tokes in. Oh, okay. Well, now that kind of writes itself, you know? And so find, okay, what's the inherent rhythm there? How does that want to dance and move? What should the beat be behind that? And kind of coming up with it that way. And then creating hooks that come from the lyric, like horn lines or guitar riffs, like with the New Kings and stuff, that really come from the lyric and are much simpler and not intellectual. It's like a lot of musicians and horn players, especially, who are really, have the, what's it called? The disadvantage of being educated in music. they really can overthink things and intellectualize their parts. Whereas usually it's like Detroit Rock City, you know, like just go for the riff, and it's going to resonate, I think, with people a lot more clearly.
Absolutely.
And a riff that plays off the lyrics, so it's like a call and response, or there's a connection to it, right?
Well, and it even reinforces the lyric, so that if the musical hook reinforces the lyric, then people are going to remember it again. They're going to remember it. They're going to find themselves walking down the street singing it, mm-hmm. Right?
It's the sort of thing where the two can go hand in hand, and you can't sort of remember one without recalling the other.
Exactly.
Now, this is a proper recording, One Toke Man. Is that correct? Just give us a bit of the circumstances of that.
Well, this was a blessing. I at my Saturday afternoon show, this young man came up to me and he said, hey, I'm a music engineering student at U of T. I have a project that I have to do. Would you come into the studio and record a song for me? I don't have any money, but we can record a song. And I'm like, with what? With full, he's like, I talked to him about my different bands, and we decided on Proud Sponsors, which is a brass band that does my original compositions. And so we went in with a 6-piece brass band and had 2 hours to go in there. They set up the mics. We do 4 or 5 takes of the song, come out, and then he mixes it, and it's his school project. But it was a Desert Fish studio. The mics are all the best mics you could get. Every, you know, their professor is helping the mic placement and everything. So the sounds were all like, they're great. And then this kid Avier, he's fantastic, creative, and just really a joy to work with. And he came up with a beautiful mix for me.
All right. Well, let's hear it.
Okay. Yeah.
We'll listen to a couple minutes.
Sure.
You wanna join, and that's where it begins for the one to command. But nobody wins until you get to the end, and now it's 2 tokes in. Yeah, he's a 1-tok man, 2 tokes in, and he's too high. He's a 1-tok man, 2 tokes in, and he's too high.
Simple, simple horn line.
You lick the tip, there's too much on the mind of the one-tok man. He do the two-step, two-step, one-step behind, and he's 2 tokes in. Yeah, he's a 1-tok man, 2 tokes in, and he's too high. Yeah, he's a 1-tok man, 2 tokes in, and in his mind, and in his mind, she like my 2-tone shoes and my 2-tone grooves. I'm not too much of a douche, I'm not too Tom Cruise. I got the luck and the booze and the 2-bone moves, but the blunt is coming back and I'm too confused. A 1-tok man, 2 tokes in, and he's too high. Yeah, he's a 1-tok man, 2 tokes in, and he's too high.
Brilliant little song.
Cool. Well, thank you.
Dig it. I dig it. And again, it's very simple, very similar to the other song. There's a 2-chord groove going on underneath with a cool horn riff and some clever lyrics and melodic hooks. What more do you need, right?
Yeah, it's a dance tune. It's a party tune. So.
Well, it's so great to hear ska done that way too, where it's just horns and not just, you know, the guitar and the organ and all that. And all that fun stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's with that project. It's kind of like my brass band, Little Rambunctious. We added a Barry Sax. And it's that idea of like having a band, playing songs, mostly ska and sort of R&B, danceable music, well-crafted songs. And why can't the horn section be the rhythm section? Why do you need guitar and keyboard? There's a whole world of music where the brass holds down the rhythm.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know.
Talking about the band, I think I hear the band coming in.
Hello.
That was a fast half hour.
It was a fast half hour, and that is all the time we have on Song Talk Radio. Special thanks to Michael Lewis Johnson for stopping by. Great stuff, Michael. Where can our listeners find more of your music?
You could look for me on Bandcamp, michaellewisjohnson.bandcamp. There's a bunch of different, probably best to try to follow me on Facebook. And there you'll see a list of the 7 bands that I'm in.
A lot of stuff to cover. Okay, great. And please send us your impressions on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Song Talk Radio, or send us an email, feedback@songtalk.ca. Also be sure to check out our YouTube channel for live performance videos and full episodes. And please stop by the site at songtalk.ca. Subscribe today to the Song Talk Radio podcast on your favorite podcast provider. And don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter at songtalk.ca. You'll find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on the show on our resources page on the website. And wherever you are in the world, please join us. Our next Song Talk meetup is on Sunday, July the 26th from 1 to 4 p.m. And it's going to be online, so you can attend from anywhere where there's an internet connection. And it's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend the meetup. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link. Also, a big thank you to Vanessa Breland for her help behind the scenes at Song Talk Radio. And most of all, we'd like to thank you, our devoted listeners. You can follow me at neilmodi.com. You can follow Phil
at TheFilAmory on Twitter.
And you can follow Mike.
Let's try Proudfoot420 on Instagram.
And Michael, you said Facebook is your favorite social media?
Yeah. Well, I don't like any of them, but I have to be on something, I guess.
So that's true. That.
Yeah. But you have your, Michael Johnson, michaellewisjohnson.com is not yet quite active, is it?
Soon. It's coming, I promise.
Under construction.
Oh, yeah. Boy. All right, and please stop by the website, songtalk.ca, browse past shows, and find out how you can be a guest. Stay safe, everybody, and keep on writing.